Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% on select styles. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And today we have Michelle Reeser-West in the studio to answer your questions. The number to call is the Garden Hotline. It is 314-436-7900. It is March 1st, Michelle, and obviously, that means it's time to get going on your garden.
Yeah, it sure is. So first of all, thanks again for having me. I think it's my third week in a row, so you guys might be getting tired of me, but I haven't gotten tired of you yet. But yeah, March 1st, it's, you know, March for a lot of people means spring, and we're still a couple of weeks away from the official start of spring, but it sure does feel like we're doing a lot out there in the gardens.
Yeah, and you work for Pointer Landscaping. So what kind of calls do you get at the beginning of March?
So actually, our phones started getting really, really, really busy that right after that week where we had super cold temperatures, and then we had that really nice day after that. So phones got really busy. We're getting a lot of people calling for all kinds of things, you know, simple spring cleanups where they just want us to come out and, you know, refresh everything, cut back and put some new mulch down. And there's a lot of people already thinking about summer and maybe wanting us to do a swimming pool or patio project. So we've got a lot of people calling in.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. Obviously, we know you do landscaping, but swimming pools and those other things are a little more advanced. So what is the range of your company?
So we are a landscape and construction company, along with, you know, the gardening that we do. We have an architect on staff, so we can pretty much do anything that you are thinking about doing outside. Something as simple as a small planting, all the way up to a pool or a complete outdoor kitchen or a major drainage project or walls or you know, all kinds of patios, paver patios, concrete patios, stamped patios. So if you can think about it, if you have a dream for your outdoor space, we can definitely make it happen. We have some really creative, amazing designers, and we make some pretty cool projects.
I love the idea. And again, this is just an idea because I live in an apartment in Soulard, but I love the idea of an outdoor kitchen, for one, and or an outdoor sports bar.
Yeah. Oh, that would be super fun.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I like that idea. And we've done a lot of kind of things like that in people's outdoor spaces. You know, we've recently done one that was a little bit more rustic, and we used some old barn wood and things like that to make a really cool outdoor space for this family to hang out in. We've done some like tiki themed outdoor spaces, you know, but we also do some really high end stuff that looks really, really nice. So, I mean, pretty much if you can think it, or if you need help with something creative or fun like that, we can do it.
One thing I learned when I did have a house that had a large property, about an acre and a half, I guess, was that if you design and build a patio, if you mess it up and have it slope the wrong way, it's a big problem.
It's huge.
A big problem. And so what happened is we had to redesign and rebuild the patio because the water was sloping into the house or toward the house. Like, they just messed it up completely. But what came out of it was a patio that was, you could land a helicopter on. It was too big, in my opinion, but it was still cool to have that much space. So I do love outdoor spaces like that.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. So if you are thinking about having a patio or something like that installed, making sure that you go through a company that you know, takes the time to shoot grades and make sure all those new hardscapes or new changes to your property are graded away from your house, because you can end up in a world of hurt with a swimming pool in your basement and that you didn't intend to have.
Yeah,
so
right.
You know, making sure that slope is correct is a really big deal.
All right, let's get to the phones. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline, and we're going to start right now with Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning. What about the fertilizer malarganite for using three or four times in a season?
In your turf or in your beds?
On my grass.
So, yeah, I mean, right now is definitely the time to start thinking about your turf. A lot of people are already putting down their crabgrass preventer. But yeah, I think that most people do recommend fertilization several times during the season. One is going to be soon, you know, as that grass starts growing or just before the grass starts growing. I don't recommend, you know, for your cool season grasses to do a summer treatment, but then again in the fall. So yeah, multiple times during the year.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for calling in, Jim. Next, let's go to Ken. Ken, you're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Yes. Good morning. Couple questions. I have access to wood chips that the power company trimmed up the trees and stuff. Can I use that immediately, or should I let it decompose?
Oh, you could definitely use it immediately. I would maybe not do a super thick layer if you're doing it around, say, perennials.
Right.
But you could use it right away for sure.
Okay. Another question. My daughter gave me two olive trees. Is there any possibility of putting them outside, or are they going to be inside plants?
So those are definitely not winter hardy for us here in Missouri. But some people, if you put them in a pot, some people will take them outside for, you know, the spring and summer. And then before it gets cold again, you can bring them back inside. They do very well in containers outside. But yeah, definitely not over winter.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right, Ken, thanks for calling in. And your question is up next. It could be anyway at 314-436-7900. Surely you have some things that you are thinking about for this spring. Could be gardening, could be, you know, specific about trees or plants or flowers, bushes, and landscaping, obviously. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here to answer those questions. We'll continue with your phone calls in just a moment. This is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, back to the Garden Hotline. Sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good morning. I'm Scott Jagow, along with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Happy March. It is the first day of March. I'm not sure I would say it's coming in like a lion. I don't know. It's definitely colder than it was yesterday. It was 70 degrees, but 43 today, mostly sunny skies. But we do have some storms possible Tuesday, maybe even thunderstorms. Is this a time of year you like, Michelle?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite times, mostly because, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the last couple months inside. You know, I get out from time to time, but as soon as these weathers just warm up just a little bit, you know, you can start getting outside, not just gardening, but doing other things. You know, it's spring to me is just about all of this growth, you know, like things have been dormant all winter. So it feels like things are coming back alive, the plants and, you know, myself included. Like sometimes the winter gets a little gloomy, and as soon as these warmer temperatures and the sun and things like that, the birds start returning. It feels like I'm just a little bit happier overall.
Yeah, I think spring does affect people's moods for sure, as winter does.
Yeah,
in a different way. All right, let's go back to the phones. The number is 314-436-7900. And Mark, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Wondering the best time or conditions to put crabgrass preventer on your lawn?
Crabgrass preventer is really, you know, weather dependent. People are starting to talk about it now. Some people are already applying it. In fact, I think that our lawn department started doing crabgrass prevention last week. Crabgrass germinates, I think it's like 50 degrees when the soil temperature is 50 degrees or something like that. So we're approaching all of these temperatures where weed seeds are going to start germinating soon. So if you haven't done it, I think you could totally start putting that crabgrass preventer down now or in the coming weeks.
And how about fertilizing evergreens?
So
early to do that?
No, it's a tad too early for fertilization. I always think about fertilizing things, you know, when they're growing. So most evergreen trees are still in their dormancy. They haven't started breaking dormancy just yet. So we typically start putting down that fertilizer right before they break dormancy. So middle of March, towards the end of March, when it starts getting a little bit warmer out, think about when they might start growing or start greening up for the season. And that's when you want to fertilize.
As far as trimming evergreens, would that also be the case before they start growing here?
Yeah, you can do some pruning on evergreens during the dormant time for sure. And then as soon as we start getting into the warmer temperatures, I would wait. Anytime you prune a plant, you're basically telling it to heal itself and make more. And when that plant grows and pushes out that new growth, it's not always hardy. And if we get a frost, that new growth could die back and open your plants up to pest and disease. So we typically, for regular pruning, I always say like tax day to Labor Day. So about April 15th, and Labor Day is probably a little early here, probably more towards the middle of September. Those are kind of like our frost lines. So if you're doing your regular maintenance pruning, like shearing of boxwoods or yews or something like that, I would wait to do that in between those periods. But anything for like size reduction, or if you're doing some depth pruning on boxwoods, it's definitely okay to be doing it now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in, Mark. While we're on the subject of fertilizer, someone asked about zoysia grass and the right fertilizer for that.
Okay. So zoysia is, I have zoysia in my front yard, and It's a warm season grass, so we typically wait a little bit longer to do fertilization on our warm season grasses. Just like I was saying about those evergreens, we want to kind of wait until those grasses break their dormancy. And zoysia is a little different. I believe that it needs a little bit more nitrogen than, you know, the cool season grass like fescue. So a lot of times we'll, on the zoysia grass, we'll do something that, and it doesn't need as much phosphorus. So we'll do a fertilizer that has that first number. Like if it's a, on the fertilizer bags, there's typically three numbers, and that first number is for nitrogen. And that zoysia needs a lot more nitrogen than other things. So if you get a fertilizer that has that first number is bigger, even the second two numbers could be zero. You could get like a 12-0-0 or something like that. But I would pick something with that bigger first number and make sure it's a slow release fertilizer and not a fast acting fertilizer.
I also was curious about something. I don't know. Maybe it was because I realized when I was reading the story this morning about Mardi Gras that we have we're about a mile or two from 1,500 porta potties. But it made me think about the impact of urine on a garden, because dogs, deer, there are other things. Is it good or is it not?
I don't think 1,500 porta potties for that event
is enough
for me. One of the reasons why I won't be going there. But it's a good question about the dog pee. I think that's the one that is the most prevalent, the thing that we worry about the most. I don't think that, you know, the deer or any other wildlife really have a significant impact on our gardens, but dogs definitely do, especially the turf. I mean, they're going out there all the time to do their business. And, you know, I see a lot of yards that are destroyed almost from, you know, dog damage of some kind, whether it's digging or whether it's them pacing up and down a fence line and they have their little dirt trail from the paths that they repeatedly take. But definitely the urine in the yards is a big deal. And a lot of times what the only thing you can do for that is to get rid of your dog. I'm just joking. I have a dog. I love dogs. Don't get rid of your dogs.
Yeah.
Watering your grass regularly is really the way. You just have to dilute it. So, you know, a lot of people with irrigation systems don't typically have a lot of problems with dog urine because they are regularly watering. If you don't have an irrigation system and you're not regularly watering and we don't have a lot of natural rainfall, you can start to see that kind of issue in your turf mostly.
Okay. I got a weird brain.
You do, but I mean, I enjoy it.
Thank you. Let's go back to people who maybe have more normal brains. Andy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I'd definitely be thinking about the dog question, too. I've got two of them. No, my question is about grass seed. We're in a newer home. We've only been in for about a year, and I'm definitely going to need to put grass seed down in my backyard, and I'm wondering when the best time to do that is.
As soon as possible. So spring overseeding can be a little bit less successful on a big scale than fall, just because our temperatures are rising going into the summer. And if that grass doesn't get rooted in really well, then it may not make it through the heat of the summer. That being said, I would go ahead and do it. I would just try to do it at ASAP, just so you can try to get as much germination as quick as possible and then get that grass rooted in as much as possible for the summer. And then you're definitely going to need to plan on overseeding again in the fall.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Andy. The number for you to call in and ask your question is 314-436-7900 for Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Next up, it is Larry. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Good.
Good. So I have a couple trees, a maple and a cherry that got chewed up pretty good by the cicadas. And now the winter seems pretty harsh. They're looking, the undersides of all those branches are looking really bad. Is there anything I should be doing to help them heal as they come out this year?
So I actually really like this question, and I'm super interested to see You know, these long-term effects of the cicadas, that pattern on the back of your branching. And if those of you haven't seen it or went out to take a look, last spring when we had all those cicadas emerging, they did quite a number on a lot of our trees, and they basically put their eggs on that underside of the tree, and there was some pretty significant damage that looked like little slits that go all the way up to the tips of the branches. And as those eggs got bigger and they the larva emerged, the slits in the bottom of the tree got bigger. But now the branches are healing themselves. So if you go out and look at it now, it looks significantly different than when it did when it first happened last year. So most of these trees, we are seeing that they are doing a great job in healing themselves and covering up those wounds. And we're not seeing a lot of immediate issues. Last year, we did see a little bit of tip dieback in some Japanese maples and a few other things. A lot of the younger trees that maybe their branches weren't as thick as some of the other ones. So a lot of those, we had saw some tip dieback that we just pruned off. But I think really the only thing that we're recommending is maybe a little bit of fertilization. I don't typically do a ton of fertilization on trees, but this might be a spring that you think about it just because it is healing itself from last year's cicada damage. So that would be the only thing. It's just maybe when it leafs out and you can kind of see where there's, you know, any dieback from that, just go ahead and prune those tips off or any dead branches. And then, like I said, a little bit of fertilization.
So what type of fertilizer would I use? Is this just a broadcast fertilizer or those spikes you buy or...
Are they established tree or how old is the tree? Are they?
Well, they're probably going in their fourth year.
So I don't think that you will. I don't think you necessarily need to use those tree spikes. You can buy them. They're easy enough to use. But I think just a simple all around basic fertilizer would be fine for that. Any slow release. I always recommend like a slow release fertilizer. But I don't think you need anything special for it.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Larry. We appreciate you taking advantage of Michelle's expertise this morning. And you can, too. The number is 314-436-7900. We have some people waiting to ask their questions, and we'll get to those in just a moment on the Garden Hotline.
Now, back to the Garden Hotline. Sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Michelle Reeser-Wess is here answering your questions at the number to call, 314-436-7900. We've had a nice group so far. Lots of questions, good ones. Let's continue. David, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So first question is about some bulbs that I had bought in the fall and then never got in the ground. I think some of them are allium. What's your recommendation? Hold on to them next fall? Are they bad now? Can we put them in the ground?
So this is a great question, and we have a lot of gardeners around town, a lot of listeners that have forgotten about their poor bulbs all winter long. So at this point, we are probably getting to a point where we shouldn't put them in the ground because it won't have enough time in the cold in order for it to do what it needs to do. What you could do or you could try to do is put them in your freezer for a couple of weeks and then put them in a container or, you know, maybe you could try to put them in the ground, but I would put them in a container. It's hard to store bulbs over the winter and then over the summer and then plant them in the ground again. Bulbs inherently only have so much energy that has been stored, and the longer that they are in the ground or above ground and not planted, the more energy they lose. They can also rot over the summer. And things like that. So you could try as an experiment to just hold on to them through the summer and try to do it in the fall and see if any of them will bloom for you next spring. But I would say if you wanted to try, I think the higher chances of seeing a bloom is probably by putting them in the freezer and then planting them in a couple of weeks in a pot.
Great. Thank you so much. The other question I have is about, so I've got areas of my lawn that are covered in leaves, so I didn't do any leaf, pick up. What's your recommendation on leaves at this point of the year?
So at this point, we're going to start having our grass growing soon. So getting those leaves cleaned up, either by blowing and removing them that way. If you have a composting lawnmower and it's not a significant amount of leaves, I think that's one of the best ways of doing it, is running it over with your lawnmower and then letting that go, be a beneficial organic matter that's going back to the soil. But yeah, definitely time, if you have a lot of leaves on your turf, to be getting those or starting to think about getting those cleaned up. As our turf grasses are coming back alive, they'll definitely want that sunlight so they can photosynthesize, and those leaves can inhibit that. So definitely start getting those picked up.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, David. The number is 314-436-7900. Let's see. Next, let's go to Pat. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. I have a grub issue. For the last 2 years, I've had a grub infestation. I'm 76. It's a lot of work to take the thatch off and then, prepare the soil for the grass seed. So two questions. When do I apply the GrubX? Because I applied it last year, but they still came back. And I believe I only did it like in the early spring. And so when to apply it, how often, and then I do have my yard certified green conservation home. Does that do anything to the worms or the insects? So my concern is there as well. But it is sure a lot of work to try to dethatch and put grass seed down again.
I really wish that our buddy Glenn Kramer was here for all of these turf and chemical questions, but so grub control is typically only put down, I believe, once per season, and we are too early for that. I do believe it's late spring, early summer time frame, and I honestly don't know what the effects that has on the earthworms or things like that, but I don't. And then you're bringing Conservation Home certified, like that's the organic program. And I think that depending on what product you're using, that's probably outside the, the scope of what they're looking for in order to, maintain that organic certification or whatever they're calling it. So, I don't know enough about that program to answer that with any confidence. But so the grub control, we're a little bit early for that, but definitely once a season.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it, Pat. Next, let's go to Nancy. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. I have a Carl Foster grass plant in my landscaping, and it's gotten so big it's starting to crowd out my other plants. So I wanted to divide it, but can I just take a shovel and cut down in the part I want to remove to make it smaller? Or do I have to dig the whole plant out and divide it?
No, you can absolutely just pop out a section if you just want to stick your shovel in there and, almost cut it in half or take just a section of it out and leave the rest. That's totally fine.
Oh, great.
You'll have to, fill that void that you of the piece that you took out, maybe with a little bit of soil from elsewhere. But, yeah, totally acceptable way to transplant and split some over crowding happening.
Okay. And when is a good time to do that?
So I believe that Carl Forster grasses are cool season. I could be wrong on that, but most of the time we wait a little bit for grasses. If you start seeing, when you start seeing that new growth emerge, that's when we know that they're coming back to life. So I would wait until you saw a little bit of green to come back from from the winter dormancy. And then as soon as you start seeing that new growth, and it would be okay to go ahead and start moving it around. And in turn, if it's a warm season, then it would just do that later on in the spring once we get, you know, more consistent temperatures or warmer temperatures. So on things like miscanthus or other warm season ornamentals, you just wait a little bit longer in the season before you divide and replant those.
Okay, great. One other question. I have Miracle Grow, and it's for acid-loving plants. Can I use that on my mums and daffodils that are starting to come up?
I don't. It's a great question. I don't know if mums and daffodils are acid-loving. I don't think it will hurt it. I mean, it's just it just has a little bit. That's you're stumping me, and it's funny. So I think so. Most of the time on you know, like our just Miracle-Gro for acid loving, it's probably not gonna hurt those, but it's really intended for things like rhododendrons,
right,
and things like that. So
yeah, that's why I bought it.
Yeah.
Okay. Should I just be on the safe side and get just regular Miracle-Gro?
Yeah, and if you're specifically wanting, there's some specific fertilizers that are just for bulbs that is really helpful to get those a good flower on the bulb, but it also helps those bulbs take in energy and store that in the roots for the next spring.
All right, Nancy, thanks for calling in this morning. We appreciate the question. We will continue with your phone calls in just a moment with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
KMOX.
Michelle Reeser-West is your guest today answering questions on our Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. A lot of topics to cover because today is March 1st. The weather's a little chilly, but it's sunny and we're thinking about spring, only a couple weeks to go. So let's get back to the phones. Jan, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
Hello. Hi. Hey, listen, this spring, I've got a big garden and it kind of gets north, south, east, and west. And I'm thinking about it. It's out sun all day. What kind of hydrangea can I plant in there that'll take full sun all day?
That's a great question. You have a lot of options when you when you're in full sun, especially with hydrangeas, because a lot of them prefer that full sun. There's a lot that of paniculata style hydrangeas or panicle hydrangeas, and there are a ton of cultivars to choose from in that area. So most of your local nurseries are going to carry, I don't want to throw out a bunch of different cultivars because a ton of, you know, all those different types of hydrangea may not be carried throughout the different nurseries. One that is very common is a Limelight hydrangea. And that one is kind of starts out when it blooms as a greenish color and then goes to white and then fades to a brown throughout the fall. But a panicle hydrangea will do really well. They're very low maintenance. You really just have to prune them once a season, and you can do that in the fall if you prefer not to have those blooms over the winter. I really like a hydrangea bloom for winter interest in my garden, so I leave up my blooms over the winter, and then I just cut them back in the late winter, early spring, so they're very low maintenance. Another option for full sun could be an oak leaf hydrangea. Those are very low maintenance, and they're all different shapes and sizes of those oak leaves. You can get a quote-unquote dwarf variety that might stay 3 or 4 feet, and then there are some that get quite large that could get, you know, as big as your house or as the height of your house over time. So I would just recommend, if you're getting that oak leaf, make sure you're getting one that stays within the size of the space that you're intending it for. But a lot of great options. Hydrangeas are super low maintenance. Almost all the varieties are, and a great option for us here in St. Louis.
Okay, good. You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan. That's what we're here for, hopefully, as much as possible to be able to answer the questions. 314-436-7900 is the number. Steven, you're up next. Good morning.
Hi, Michelle. My question is, I had my lawn company apply pre-emergent weed killer in freezing temperatures and snow. Will that application still be effective?
Yeah, so a lot of people were out really early in the last couple of weeks putting down that product. I saw a lot of companies out there doing it. One of the good things about the snow is that it helps kind of water in that product. Just anytime you put down a granular product, it is not effective until water hits it and helps it to dissolve. So that product that was put down in the snow or before the snow is going to be just fine. Like I said, it dissolved when that snow melted, and you know it's doing its thing there, still in the soil, and will be effective on killing your plants or helping everything to not germinate. So I think you should be fine.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. Up next, we have Tom. Good morning, Tom. You are on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Good morning. First of all, thank you very much for your program. You do a wonderful job, both of you. I need some advice on a banana tree. First time I've ever put a banana tree down. My neighbor gave me one, two of them actually, and I want to put them down, and I want to see if I can get bananas off of them. Is that possible? Thank you.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody actually get a banana off of them in Missouri. I'm not saying it's not possible, but I think that they don't get mature enough in size because we're having almost every winter you get a dieback down to the ground. So the plant doesn't really have enough time to get big enough to create the fruit. But I think you could definitely, I mean, it's the bananas are kind of a cool plant to grow. It's interesting to me that we can even grow them here because they're so tropical. But it's one of those things that the top will melt away over the winter months. And if you protect that base or if it's in a protected area, you can get it to come back year after year. A lot of people will dig up their banana trees and bring them into their garage or inside to protect them over the winter. But I don't think it's likely for you to get bananas off of the tree.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
So what do banana trees look like here? I mean, here. I know what banana trees look like in the tropics. So I'm just saying here.
They stay much smaller. You know, it's almost like a palm tree look. Very tropical looking. And then they can get quite big here in St. Louis, especially ones that have been in the ground for a while. But because they're dying back, like I said, they're not able to grow that fruit. But I mean, they're just super tropical and they're really cool. They're just sometimes not hardy through the winter. If we have a really hard mm-hmm. winter and you didn't take the time to do some, you know, covering them with mulch or leaves or a good protection to get through the winter, they may not make it.
Yeah, that's cool. To have a banana tree in your yard in Missouri
mm-hmm.
seems kind of fun.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you that there was an event this weekend I wanted to ask you about at the art museum
yeah.
in Forest Park.
Yes.
Isn't it like Art in Bloom or something along those lines?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Art in Bloom is going on this weekend at the St. Louis Art Museum in Forest Park. It's actually like a really, really cool event. It's one of their biggest event, if not their biggest event of the year. But what they do is they invite local florists to come, and they are making floral displays based off of a piece of artwork that they were assigned. They randomly select the art that these florists get, and it's kind of a competition. They're putting together a display with flowers that's inspired by the piece of art that they were assigned, and it's going on today. It started yesterday, and it's going on today and tomorrow. And it's a great thing to, you know, the art museum's fun anyway, but if you're a plant lover or a flower lover, it's a really cool thing to go and see. And the art museum's free, so I think it's free admission.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know their hours for sure, but I think they're open till 5 o'clock,
yeah,
or 6 o'clock or something like that. But it's a really cool, it's something like totally different that you don't usually see. And the displays that these florists are coming up with, some of them are really big, but they're all really, really cool and creative and imaginative. And I think this year, I haven't seen a picture of the actual display, but I saw a picture of the artwork of the first place. There's a judges, the judges, you know, give out first, second, third place. But the winning piece of artwork that it was inspired by is just like a vase from, you know, a couple hundred years ago or something. But they also pick paintings or sculptures or things like that. And then it's up to the florist to interpretate that in whatever way they want and come up with a cool display with flowers. I think other things are allowed, but I think the rules are kind of strict on what they can use. Like, I know they're not allowed to use any kind of soil. Like, they're really strict on the amount of water you can use. And I don't think they're allowed to use, like, fruits or seeds or things like that. So I think it's interesting what they can come up with just with the use of cut flowers. It's beautiful. So I would highly recommend doing that today or tomorrow.
We might have a follow-up on the banana trees, but we'll have to get to it after the top of the hour. So let's do that. 314-436-7900 for the second hour of the Garden Hotline, which is about to get underway here in a couple minutes with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Thanks for tuning in.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Stop banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me one.
We always have an unexpected theme on the Garden Hotline, and today it could be what is in my hand, a banana. We had a call about bananas earlier, and then now on the Garden Hotline, we have a follow-up from Bruce for Michelle Reeser-West. Bruce, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to clarify something. I listened to this banana tree call in, and I wanted to clarify that everybody calls a banana tree a tree, but actually it's considered the largest herb on earth. And I learned that a few years ago, and most people don't know that, and I thought that was interesting. Everybody's got a telephone, they can Google it, but it is not a tree, but the largest herb on earth. That's the only reason I called.
Thank you. I really like that you called and shared that. And, you know, the hardy banana tree is not something that I know a lot about. And during the break, I did Google the banana tree and learned that the fruit, it does in fact...
Are we still saying tree?
I'm sorry. It's technically an herbaceous perennial. So I'm still calling it a tree. We know that it's not a tree. But it does fruit. It's just not something that it's grown for. And it doesn't look like your traditional banana. It's some little green fruit that are inedible on this type of banana tree. So super interesting. I'm learning a lot. I love that about this show is that I don't know everything. And a lot of times I learn a lot from the callers and from looking it up afterwards.
I like that, too. It's just a coincidence. I don't remember the last time I brought a banana into the studio, but I did this morning just by happenstance, and here we are talking about bananas, so I have a prop.
That's amazing.
The number to call is 314-436-7900, and I did want to follow up on the other... I'm sorry to be pointing the banana. I did want to follow up on the art show.
Yeah.
So again, I just want to give people the details on that. It is today and tomorrow at the Art Museum in Forest Park, and it's art all designed around plants and flowers and things like that.
So the art itself doesn't necessarily have anything to do with plants or flowers.
Oh, okay.
There are just regular pieces of art or different scenes. It doesn't have, I think most of them actually don't have anything to do with plants themselves. And they choose different paintings or pieces of artworks or sculptures. Every year it's a different set of things that they're using for their inspiration. So yeah, it doesn't necessarily have that, but they're using the flowers to create something that is inspired by the piece of artwork.
I see. Okay. And that is taking place at the Art Museum, which is far enough away from Mardi Gras. I mean, it's a good alternative.
Shouldn't have a problem.
Yeah. Just stay away from the madness over there.
For sure. And it's a great way to explore the art museum if you haven't been there in a while or you've never been there. These pieces are scattered throughout the museum. They're not all in one place. So it's a great way to kind of see the entire museum.
And the fact that it's free and that all of those amenities in Forest Park or most of them are free, it's an incredible thing that St. Louis has that most other cities don't have. And I've lived in a lot of other places. And in fact, last year, so the Chris and Amy show, every year they do a bracket, and it's a different topic. Like a couple of years ago, it was sub sandwiches, and people vote, nice. You know, a March Madness style bracket, and it, you know, just goes through one versus two, you know, just different shops versus different shops, and then it ends up with a winner. And last year, they did things about St. Louis, so mm-hmm. places in St. Louis. So, you know, Emo's Pizza and Toasted Raviolis and the Arch and all kinds of things. And I went through and did my own bracket to get to my own answer as to what is the thing about St. Louis that is the most iconic or most important. And I came up with, and you know, there were things like Jack Buck, Camo X, you know, stuff like that. And my winner was Forest Park. I could not get around Forest Park as being the thing about St. Louis that's the most... I know everybody knows the Arch around the world, but in terms of what Forest Park provides this city, it's unparalleled.
For sure. And I think, you know, like it's one of those things that our residents are using, like the locals are using it. You know, all of those other kind of top 10 things that you see if you're Googling to go to another city, there's all of those things. And that's true for us, too, the Arch and the Toaster Raviolis and all of that stuff. But something that I think that is just really at the heart of St. Louis and that we are so incredibly lucky to have for so many reasons is Forest Park. And even for me as a nature lover and a gardener, there are so many things within Forest Park that you can enjoy, from the Jewel Box, which is a really cool greenhouse that has a bunch of really cool tropicals and things like that in it, to the zoo, which horticulturally speaking is fantastic. They've done so much work over the years to get all of that landscaping and things at the zoo to the incredibly high level that it is. You know, there's the naturescape within Forest Park that you can hike on, and kids can jump and play on rocks and tree branch or tree trunks and play in, you know, waterfalls and things like that. It's a really cool designed natural landscape, along with just the regular trees and shrubs and natural areas and you know, the annual plantings and displays that they do throughout the year. It's just, if you're a plant nerd, Forest Park is definitely the place to be.
Do they have places where things are labeled? I mean, like the Nature Reserve. Aaron Goss from the Nature Reserve is one of the frequent guests we have here. And I went there as my roaming St. Louis a couple weeks ago. And, of course, they have throughout the reserve little tags on plants so that you can learn what they are. Mm-hmm. Does Forest Park have anything like that? Or
no? I don't think they do. And I'm not sure if they have that in the works or not, but it would definitely be something cool because they have some really excellent specimens of trees, and the natural areas are incredible, and they're using a lot of natives and things like that. But I don't believe they do have any markings, but I could be wrong about that.
Well, if they have any banana, banana plants?
Banana plants.
It can't say tree on it. Decided that. But we've learned a lot this morning, and we're going to continue learning a lot and answering your questions. The number to call is the Garden Hotline. It's 314-436-7900. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is our guest answering your questions. There are a lot of things to be thinking about right now. It is March 1st. So we will continue with your phone calls. Again, 314-436-7900. Stay tuned. This is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Good morning. I'm Scott Jagow. Glad to have you in. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here answering your questions. You can ask your question at 314-436-7900. Steve is up next. Good morning, Steve. You there?
Michelle.
Oh, there we go.
Appreciate your show. I have a comment and a question. About 3 decades ago, a coworker of mine, we worked at a dealership, and he had a green thumb and a banana plant. And every year, he brought the banana plant into the dealership because of a large showroom, and it seemed to do quite well. And the question is, with the upcoming forecast for rain, typically I put down my pre-emergent, and I'm planning on doing it before this next rain. I was generally put a weed and feed down. What soil temperature should I be looking for before I bother putting the weed and feed down?
So the weed and feed you could be doing now. I don't always recommend doing the weed and feed, but if I was going to do it, it would be now. Most of the time with the weed portion of the weed and feed, it is only it's only attacking the weeds that are currently present. So if you have a lot of winter weeds in the turf, it would be a great time to put it down now. If you don't have a lot of winter weeds, the weed and feed is not necessarily needed. You could just do the feed portion of that. But the weed and feed doesn't have a long-term, like pre-emergent effect. You could definitely go ahead and put that down now. Again, with the feed part, we talked about it earlier in the show. If you're doing a fertilization now where we're not getting a lot of active growth on our cool season, then I would do a lower amount of that fertilization and then do a little bit more or do a heavier fertilization once the grass starts growing or getting ready to grow.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in this morning, Steve. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900 is the number. Up next, we have Bob. Bob, good morning. You're on with Michelle.
Good morning. I have a ivy on a hill in my backyard, but there's grass growing in the ivy. Is there anything that'll kill the grass but not the ivy?
Yeah, so there are some herbicides out there that are just targeted for grass. So you can, there's so many different brand names and things like that, but what you'll want is a specific herbicide, a selective herbicide that is just designed to kill kill the grass and not other plants around it. So that would be the only type that I would recommend using. Definitely don't use something like Roundup or, you know, something that's a non-selective herbicide that's going to kill everything in its path, but one that's specific for only killing grass and grass-like weeds.
Do you have a specific name I can look for?
I don't. I'm not good at brand names and things like that with this turf product. Again, I wish Wes was here today. But yeah, I think if you went to a hardware store, your local nursery, they would be able to tell you what brands that they're carrying and go from there.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for calling in, Bob. Up next, let's go to Mark. Mark, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hello, I'm calling about banana plants again. I'm sorry.
Of course.
I love it.
Because I got in late here. My wife was listening to you in the car, and she came in and said, you need to call them. I've been growing banana plants here in St. Charles for about 40 years.
Wow.
I started with one, and I get probably 80 every year when I'm done. What I do, I cut all the leaves off, and I dig them out, just take a shovel, go around, because the roots are very small, and pull them out of the ground, knock the dirt off, and put them in my basement. I do that right around Halloween. And even after the frost, it's fine. And then I put them in around the 15th of April, and then it takes about a month or 6 weeks, and they start shooting leaves out. But I do get bananas almost every year.
Wow.
And the reason I do that, because those plants are old. You know, some of the plants I put in my basement could be 6 foot tall with all the leaves cut off of them. And I'm not sure how many years it takes for them to start bearing, but I'm guessing 4 or 5 from the start. Because whenever you plant these, there's always plants that grow off of that main, I'm going to call it a ball, but I don't think that's what it's called. So when you plant one, you're probably going to dig out 5. And you can break those off from the main plant if you want to. The other thing is, once that plant bears bananas, it dies. The little guys around it, they live. So, and that happens in the wild also. So whenever you see one that's got bananas on it, you know, that particular plant will die.
That is super interesting, and I appreciate you calling in. It's not a plant that I use a lot, and in fact, when I do use it, we're typically just using it as a seasonal element in a container or around a pool or something like that. But
yeah.
I love this follow-up, and I love that this has become kind of like the theme of our show. But going back to those fruit, and they're like little green inedible fruit, is that correct?
These are edible. I wish I could show you a picture. I have a little baby that's eating one. It's so cute because this banana is like 3 inches tall, and she's holding on to this banana and eating it.
And what variety? Do you know the variety of banana that you're growing?
That's the thing I don't know for sure. I was just in Hawaii a few weeks ago on Kauai, and the guy there, the banana grower, told me he thought it was an apple banana. That's what he called it.
Awesome.
But I don't know. I haven't figured that out or tried to figure it out.
So what do you do with all of these babies that you get from the main plants?
I give them away. I've given away thousands of them.
Awesome.
People charge $50 for plants all the time in the fall. I've given so many away, I can't count them. But my banana plants are all over the place.
Very
Chicago.
Cool.
But they do fine. And you know, the thing is, those little roots, there's a lot of roots, but they're very small, not even maybe the size of a pencil. But if it gets really windy, what happens? The leaves shred. So that's why the plants don't fall over.
Oh, cool. That's an interesting little survival tactic.
Look awful after that, but they won't fall over.
Yeah, and that's very similar to palm trees. The palm trees have a very shallow, very short root system, and they are not super stable in high winds, but that is one of the things that help protect them and keep them upright. Are those leaves that you're right, they just kind of shred, and because you would think that they are so large that they would be like a sail, that they would,
correct,
you know, have so much resistance to the wind and easily topple over because they don't have a large established root system. So it's actually a really cool survival technique that they've adapted to over the years. So, but I really appreciate your phone call. This is really, I've enjoyed you telling us about that.
Just one more thing. Probably my biggest ones get about 12 inches in diameter at the bottom, the stalk. And then it'll go up, the leaves will go up to 12 feet. And I get those almost every year. Now, that's planted in the ground. If you plant them in pots, they're not going to do as well normally. And you can't water them too much either. And the only thing that I've had attack them was Japanese beetles, and they don't do much to them. I've never had one die. So.
Wow.
I'll let you go.
Thank
All
you
right,
so
Mark,
much.
Thanks so much for calling in. That's great. We have that. He might be the St. Louis area's foremost expert on banana plants.
We're going to call him every time we have a banana question. But, you know, this is a great example to me of what I like about the show and what I like about gardening in general. There's so much to know about gardening. And I've been doing this professionally for 15 years, and I've been doing it really my whole life at the feet of my grandma and my mother and other members of my family. But I still learn stuff about gardening every day. And I learn it from coworkers. I learn it from other horticulturists. And I learn it from, you know, just your average person that's out there gardening and trying new things. And it's really just one of those things that I love and think is so cool about gardening and the community of people that also enjoy gardening. So I really do appreciate that call in. I love learning new stuff.
Well said, Michelle. And I think it's one of the reasons this show has lasted so long is because there are people out there with knowledge like that, and they can share it and they can ask questions. And then there's offshoots of that with the answers that we get, and then we follow up. And so, yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it too. All right. We are going to continue with your phone calls in just a minute. The number is 314-436-7900.
Sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of his beauty on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
That's funny. Drew Young, our producer, getting creative there. We are talking about bananas a lot this show. I like it when we have an unexpected, unplanned theme. Doesn't mean we have to talk about bananas the whole time, but we've had some fun with that subject. And Mark called in a few minutes ago. I couldn't believe how many banana plants he has.
Yeah, and I knew that they kind of suckered like that and made more, but that's an impressive amount.
It is.
That he's producing and giving away every year.
And he said his plants are all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago and throughout the St. Louis area. We have quite a few phone calls to get to. 314-436-7900 is the number. Jim, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, on the banana topic, I messed around with bananas years ago, and I did the digging them up every fall and dragging them in the basement. And one year I just said, I'm tired of doing this, so I quit. But then 5 years ago, somebody gave me two more plants, and I thought, I'm just going to plant these in the fall. I will cut them off about 6 inches above the ground and mulch them pretty heavily. And if they make it, they make it. If they don't, they don't. Well, they have made it tremendously. What I do is cut them off about 6 inches above the ground, put straw over them, then cover that with a tarp and, you know, brick it down so the wind doesn't blow it off. And every year they come back with babies, and I've got a regular colony going now. Last fall, the tallest leaves were 18 feet, and the stalks are about a foot in diameter, so they're very heavy when you cut them down. It's almost like a tree falling. You have to be somewhat careful. But I'd like to dispel the myth that you have to dig them up and take them in. If you mulch them pretty heavy, they will come back, even in the St. Louis climate.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, that's definitely something that I can agree with. I think that if, you know, for me, when I think about bananas and having, or anything, you know, a lot of people do elephant ears and things like that, where you have to dig them out in the fall and do all of this work. I'm a lazy gardener. I sell maintenance, I do garden maintenance, but I actually don't want to. I want to have as simple of a process as possible. So, you know, when I hear about plants that you potentially have to dig up and store and then plant them again every year, that sounds like a big no for me. So hearing that from you and knowing that you could cut those off and protect them and have great success, you know, makes me maybe want to plant some. But I will ask, and I think it's super interesting that you guys are talking about all of these babies that are coming. Like, how much work is it taking to keep those in check? Like, if you don't want them spreading and you want to keep them in a contained area, or you just want one or two, are you doing or having to do a lot of work to keep those babies from spreading everywhere?
No, I'm very much a lazy gardener too, like you. I don't do anything to them. That's one point. If you want to try this method, pick a spot where you don't mind them just encroaching and encroaching and encroaching. Because right now I've got a spot that I'm looking at it. It's probably 8 feet long and 4 feet wide. And it's probably got close to 20 plants in it when I cut them down last fall. So I just let the babies keep going, and they grow like crazy. So, but if you didn't want them, you know, just cut them off and just keep cutting them off till they give up.
Awesome. I appreciate the expanded discussion on the banana tree. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate it. Joan, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Michelle. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Great show. I love it. My question is about prairie grass or miscanthus. I have two beautiful, I guess you call them plants, but in the front and the backyard.
Well, they're not a tree.
They're not a tree.
No.
And in the years past, we've always cut them back by, you know, early February. And here I am in March, and they're still looking pretty good. Should I just let them be, or?
Yes.
What am I supposed to do with these things?
So we actually, my maintenance crews have just started on our maintenance properties cutting these grasses back. So you actually have plenty of time, and in my opinion, you're right on time. So miscanthus takes a little bit of time to get going. It's not a cool season grass, so it takes a little bit longer. So you actually have a little bit more time to cut that miscanthus back. And when you think about all ornamental grasses and cutting those back, you can't cut them back in the late or the early winter if you don't want to. You know, some grasses are a little messier throughout the winter than others. So some people like to have that cleaner look throughout the winter. I love leaving up grasses again in the winter. It's something to look at. It look cool in the winter sunlight. Yeah. And when it snows. So I leave mine up as long as I possibly can. So really, I kind of watch on my grasses to look for that new growth to start emerging. And that's when I go ahead and cut them back. You can go out there today. Tomorrow's weather is supposed to be really nice. So it'd also be a great day to do it. But you still have, I would say, you know, weeks left to enjoy them up as you know, last year's growth if you don't have time or you don't want to cut them back just yet.
What happens if you don't do anything?
Nothing really happens. So grass is in their native habitat. Don't, you know, nobody's cutting those back on a yearly basis. So they just will grow new growth. And over time, those old blades and those old pieces of grass will break off and then, you know, go back into the earth as they decompose. You can see, you know, some of those old plumes that are sticking through. But over time, the plants don't need our human interaction to do a good job. In fact, they've been doing it for thousands and millions of years without us interrupting them. It's really just an aesthetic thing that we, you know, we don't like how it looks, or we want that cleaner looking landscape. Sure. But it is healthier for them. And one of the things that you should be doing when you cut back any of your ornamental grasses, miscanthus is a good one. This is your pretty much your one time of year. Whenever you choose to cut it back, it's your one time a year to kind of clean out the base. A lot of older ornamental grasses, especially larger ones, can get some rotting at the crown. So cleaning that out. And then a good rule is every few years, 3 to 5 years, you're going to kind of split and separate some of those grasses out. What we typically look for is a hole in the center of those larger grasses about the size of a basketball. And then once you get to that size, then it's time to maybe dig up that plant and get rid of some of that. The core of that, where there's dead in the middle, can sometimes be really hard and densely packed with old roots and old the old crown. But every 3 to 5 years, it's a great idea to kind of split those grasses and clean them up a bit. But every year when you cut them back is a great time to clean out all of that old stuff at the crown.
Well, that is great advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joan.
All right.
Appreciate the call at 314-436-7900. Dee Dee, you're up next for Michelle Reeser-West. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about the best time to trim an oak tree, Japanese maple, and a crepe myrtle.
So oak trees, you should hurry up and get those pruned if you're going to prune them. We recommend really by the first or second week of March that we stop pruning oaks up until June. Oaks have a disease they get called oak wilt, and that's spread by insects that that transmit the sap from tree to tree. So no oak pruning. Really, you have maybe, like I said, a week or two to finish any oak pruning. But as far as the Japanese maple goes, you could prune that now up until it starts leafing out. On most of our ornamental trees, most trees in general, I wouldn't recommend doing a lot of pruning while the tree is sending all that energy to growing leaves. So that that dormant pruning, like I said, we still have a lot of time. The other thing I look for with pruning is that if I look at the buds of something and the buds have really swollen and it's getting ready to, you know, break that dormancy, whether it's a flower or a leaf, then I will wait until after it flowers or after it's fully done leafing out so the plant can send all of its energy to that process.
Okay. All right. And when you cut them, cut the branches, not, you don't do it flush with the trunks, right?
If you need to do it flush with the trunk, if you need to take that whole branch off, you can cut it back. But when you're pruning branches off of a tree, it's really important that you identify the branch bark color. And on a lot of trees, or most trees, you can kind of see that. There's like a line. If you look closely at where the branch meets the tree, there's like a line on most trees that goes all the way around the branch. And you want to be careful to cut that branch off just outside of that line, and that will help the tree to compartmentalize and to heal a lot better. And if you go within that and you cut all the way up to the trunk, then the tree will have a harder time, you know, healing that wound and will open up the tree to pest and disease issues. So, you know, you want to get it close, but you want to make sure that you're getting it, you know, a quarter of an inch or so away from that branch bark collar.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in this morning. Let's go next to Mike. Mike, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering if I'd have any success now moving some zoysia plugs from my current zoysia lawn to some bare spots. I know it's a couple months away from the growing season, but wanted to, you know, now maybe while the soil is moist and kind of soft, if it's a waste of time to do it this early, or if I would have some success with them taking root when the growing season starts.
So I would hold off. I think it's a not a great time for zoysia to do any kind of plugs or transplanting of that. You really need it. It's completely dormant right now. So
right.
So it's not taking up any water, anything like that. So so it won't get anything that it needs. So I would definitely wait on zoysia until it gets warmer, until it's actively growing. If you were, on the other hand, if anybody out there is thinking about, you know, transplanting some fescue, if it's starting to green up, we're still, you know, having sod cut right now and installed on properties for the fescue. But definitely with the zoysia, you got to wait or you probably won't be successful.
Okay. So maybe May 1st is the earliest or kind of
it's
watching the temperature.
Yeah, all that is weather dependent. You know, right. Just watch and you start seeing that green and that you know, the grass coming, flushing up a little bit. You know, just wait till you see growth, active growth.
Right, right. Okay. I won't waste my time at this point. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mike, for calling in. We'll try to wrap up here. We got one segment left. We've got a few phone calls to get to. We'll get to them as soon as we can. With Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
Now, back to the Garden Hotline. Sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery. A celebration of his beauty on the voice of St. Louis. KMOX.
Not going to waste any time. We're going to go straight to the phones. Claude's been waiting patiently. Claude, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. You there, Claude?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
We're good.
For about 18 years, we've been on this property, and we've got multiple kinds of bushes and trees. And just 2 years ago, I started seeing scale and spider mites infestation in almost every single plant that we have. And I was wondering if you could tell me if you've been seeing that in Missouri and I've been treating it. You know, with soaps and then also some neem oil, trying to make sure they're watered properly, which I always did before. But I'm getting some damage, split wood on branches, cankers on some of the trees. And I'm just wondering if you've seen that and what we could do to try to alleviate it.
So I think that you are definitely onto something. I think for some reason, and I'm sure it's climate or weather related, at least for me, you know, I've been working professionally for about 15 years. And I think for the last couple of years, we've definitely, it feels at least like we are dealing with scale and certainly with spider mites, especially on boxwoods, a lot more commonly than we have in the past. And honestly, I do think, you know, at least for the last couple of years and the kind of uptick that we're seeing, it feels like it's probably weather related. You know, we've had a lot of ups and downs and dramatic swings and, you know, several times in the past couple of years where we've had drought, several times in the past couple of years where we have had, you know, frost damage or prolonged wind chill temperatures. And we've had several times in the past couple of years where we've had torrential rain events where we have, you know, upwards of 7 inches falling in one rain event. So we have all of these kind of fluctuating things happening, and it's been, you know, really contributing to the pest and disease problem that we're seeing on our ornamental plants. It sounds like what you're doing and treating them is you know, what needs to be happening. Some things that can help with pest and disease, like you mentioned, is, you know, like regular, consistent watering. The other thing that can sometimes help is just some proper pruning techniques. So a lot of things that get scale, including magnolias, can benefit from, you know, some thinning, some pruning to create sunlight and things penetrating down into all the branches. Also, that helps with airflow. You know, sometimes that can help. Same with boxwoods. We're seeing a lot of spider mites on boxwoods, a lot of spider mites on on burning bush and things like that. So sometimes some just getting air circulation and sun down in into the center of those plants can kind of help. That is not the treatment for those things. So the act of spraying and multiple sprays, it just takes a lot of time to get those under control. And then hopefully, you know, we can have some better success this year and the following years with our with those pest problems.
Okay. Okay, well, I thank you very much for your information.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Claude. That was a good question. Linda, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, hi. We have three real young fruit trees. They're about 2.5, 3 years old. And last year when we had the cicadas, we were told, oh, don't worry about them. They won't hurt anything. Well, now they look like the branches look like they have been sliced and like, almost like scorched.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's anything, I mean, if they're history or what.
So I think it's probably too soon to tell. A lot of the younger plants are where we'll see most of the problems over the more established plants. But they really did go after our fruit trees for sure. So it's still early goings in the season. I would just kind of wait and see how they flush out, maybe give them a little bit of fertilization. But I would hope that they recover. It looks a little rough right now, but we're still very, you know, feeling really good about these plants coming through the cicada damage.
We've got one more
call.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. We got one more call. Jeff, you're on the Garden Hotline.
All right. Well, good morning, and thank you for your service. I enjoy listening to you. I have some limelight hydrangeas that I had trimmed before in past years earlier, but I did trim them this year. They still have the bloom or the flowers on them. And also, I don't know if you talked, I thought I heard someone ask about trimming crepe myrtles. So if you could just talk about those two things for me, I would appreciate it.
Thanks.
So really quickly, we got to end soon, but yes, go ahead and prune those hydrangeas now. You have plenty of time to still prune those of the paniculata style. And then on crepe myrtles, I think it's a little too early. I like to wait until it leafs out. You can see where the winter damage has occurred and then just prune off all that dead and even out the height from whatever winter damage you might have had.
Good answers, good questions. Another successful show, yeah. Garden Hotline, bananas. It was bananas.
It was. Bananas.
All right, Michelle, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, next week I'm back.
All right.
You guys are stuck with me.
Yeah, keep the streak going. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.